Dry Heat Check with J. Co. and Espo. I'm Jared Cohen. That's Greg Esposito. Episode 7. Now, we've done 7 episodes, Espo, and number 7 this time will be named after Keith Tkachuk. The original Captain Coyote gets the nod for episode 7.
Gotta love it. I was a huge Coyotes fan back in the day. Really happy that we're going to name this one after Keith Tkachuk. He and Jeremy Roenick are two of the nicest athletes I ever met. You hear that a lot about hockey guys, and they held true with it when I was a kid. Didn't get a lot of chance to meet a lot of athletes, but those were a few of them that I met, and they left a pretty big impression.
As we got through 6 episodes, Espo, I started to feel bad that we hadn't named one after a Coyote yet, but once I saw Keith Tkachuk was on his way, I was like, it would make sense for the first Coyote for us to name an episode after B. Keith Tkachuk, because I had the same experiences as you did in dealing with him when I was a kid. Really nice guy, heck of a player. Was a shame he couldn't retire in a Coyotes uniform and get further in the playoffs when the team first moved here to Phoenix. But yep, high regard, Keith Tkachuk, episode 7. Other notable people that wore the number 7, we'll start with the Diamondbacks. Robbie Hammock, he also wore number 6, so it feels like we've mentioned him 20 times. I think we have to mention he must have had the same amount of numbers as he did positions on the field.
And probably hits as a Diamondback.
And probably hits. It's a shame he didn't have the same amount of numbers as perfect games he caught. So that's Robbie Hammock. Carlos Quinton, hard hitting. Carlos Quinton wore the number 7 in the brief time he was here. And currently Wellington Castillo wears the number 7.
Former number 1 pick, Carlos Quinton.
Yeah, absolutely. And we obviously never got to see what would pan out with him in a Diamondbacks uniform. So Matt Leinart for the Arizona Cardinals. I thought I would just leave it at that. And wearing the number 7 for the Arizona Cardinals.
I think that about sums it up. Although it is unfair. I believe Steve Berline also wore that number. And probably a little unfair to forget old Steve there.
Yeah, we'll throw old Steve in there. And then for the Suns, Kevin Johnson. Probably my all-time favorite son. As when we look back at my childhood, I always did the KJ drill, you know, when you keep dribbling the ball between your legs over and over again. When I was a kid, that's how I would practice dribbling the basketball. I was a big KJ fan back in the day. It was hard not to name this episode after him, but we'll give the Keith Tkachuk 7 the nod.
Look, we can name episode number 11 after Kevin Johnson because few people know this, but he wore 11 for the first 3 months as a Sun after he was traded here by the Cavs. And you know what? I'm glad we named it after Keith Tkachuk, because the next opportunity we're going to really have to name a Coyotes, you know, episode after a Coyote is 19 with Shane Doan, then 35 with Nikolai Habibulin, which wasn't going to happen. That's going to be Joe Klein. And then we'd have to wait all the way until we get to 97, and we'd have to name that episode after Jeremy Roenick.
Well, so hold up, Espo. What, Kevin Johnson might have to rival another Coyote at 11 because Dally Drake wore the number 11.
I'm sorry. We're naming it after KJ because most people will be like, number 11, Kevin Johnson? What the hell are you guys talking about?
So that would be a good teaser. It'll get more people to listen to the podcast to figure out what the heck we're thinking.
It's tough to get more people to listen to this podcast. We're already astronomical in those numbers. That's the lie I'm going to tell everybody right now.
So, Espo, we've got a lot of fun stuff coming up. The Cardinals, I'm all in Coyotes mode right now, clearly. The Cardinals are gearing up for their first preseason game. Tim Tebow is back in the news. We'll bring in a new element of this show that we'll bring in every so often called the Raising of Grievances. And Espo, I know you have a lot of grieving to do.
You did it again. You misnamed a segment. It's the airing of grievances, Jayco. Come on.
All right, can we run this back, please? Can we just start the whole thing all over again?
Nope.
The airing of grievances.
No, I told you. I got a hard out at 35 minutes on this episode, so we can't re-record anything.
Okay, then we will keep it rolling. I have adjusted it on my sheet. The airing of grievances. Espo will have something to say there. And then we'll bring back a wet cold take this week. Didn't have one last week, so we'll bring it back this week, and it's very Olympic driven. But let's start off, Espo, with the Cardinals. Larry Fitzgerald and Carson Palmer get their extension. It frees up cap room. Jared Valdir does the same. A lot of news around Cards Camp with them doing that. They're going to retire as Cardinals. And I know your original thought, I think you were the first person I got a text from after that happened that simply just said, wow, wasn't expecting that.
well, $36 million between the two of them in these extensions, 11 to Fitzgerald, 23.5 to Carson, around that area. So it's a lot of money to put in two guys that are veterans, but you're rewarding them for Larry for the faithfulness that he's shown to the Cardinals over the years. And then Carson, you know, we talked about it last episode. If you don't have a good quarterback, you're in a world of hurt, and they know they've got a pretty good one here. So they're banking on the fact that Carson has at least a few more years left in the tank. All in all, I like it for the most part. It'll be interesting to see what happens if this team actually lives up to its potential and wins a Super Bowl. You got to wonder if those two guys decide to ride off into the sunset and those extensions really don't mean that much anyways.
And what it would end up meaning is them creating space to make necessary additions in the middle of the season because of injuries and having the flexibility to do so. We saw them do that with Dwight Freeney last year and Red Bryant on the defensive line. They did it with Chris Johnson during training camp last year. The flexibility is important. I think I read that they only had about $3.5 million available in cap room after one of their most recent signings, which I believe was Mike Jenkins. So they really didn't have anything to work with. They're almost maxed out in terms of their cap. This gives them the flexibility to where if there is an injury that occurs and there is something that goes down beginning of the season, end of training camp, middle of the season, down the stretch, that they can make additions. And it's not a problem for them to do so because they have the flexibility because these two veteran stars were able to make adjustments.
Look, can we give it up to Jared Valdir, who decided to be what every good offensive lineman should be? And he protected the stars of the offense, in particular his quarterback. He reshuffles his contract so these guys could get their money. I applaud him, who is probably the unsung hero in all of this.
So what position do you think ultimately is needed with this flexibility? What position are you kind of concerned about now that camp has gone on for almost 2 weeks now and you're looking how this team is shaping up and you're thinking, wow, if they have that flexibility, you know, they sure could use a little something extra at this position.
Look, offensive line is always going to be that position for me, especially when it comes to the Cardinals. If they can add depth with that offensive line, if they get a chance to do that with a good talent that gets cut from another team, always take that chance. I'm a big believer in that because one injury on this offensive line and it could really torpedo all the chances for this season. So that, and you know, if you need to potentially adding another player into that defensive backfield,
yes,
might not be a bad move as well.
I couldn't agree more on both fronts. Offensive line, you can never have too many offensive linemen that can come out and play NFL level football. I am a little bit concerned about the secondary, Espo, as we've now 2 weeks into camp. Everyone is raving about Brandon Williams, and I'm really excited that everyone's raving about Brandon Williams. They made a risk. It's a third round pick. We know what third round picks have turned into since Steve Keim became the general manager. I want this guy to do well. However, he is still a rookie. He is still unproven. A lot of things change once the lights come on Sundays. After him, Mike Jenkins has been hurt. Justin Bethel still isn't back on the field. Secondary depth, I think, could be a very big concern for this team because you can't rely on just Patrick Peterson to make all the plays. Plus, Tyrann Mathieu, what's to say that he's not going to be 100% by the time he's back? It's one thing if he's back. It's another thing if he's back. And back playing like the way he's capable of playing. So the secondary is a little concerning, but I'm with you. If you could waste some of that cap space on any position, offensive line depth is an important one.
I enjoy you kind of slipping into a Chris Berman impersonation.
Back.
You just start. You have a few drinks before this. Is that how Chris Berman winds up getting to that back?
Yeah, I wish. Yeah. I wish I did. I might have made things go a little bit better to this point. I probably wouldn't have screwed up a name already. For
no,
this
you
episode,
probably would have screwed up a lot more. So
then maybe it's a good thing. And the Raiders coming up, preseason games are a mess. They're really hard to watch sometimes, but it is still a good barometer of what you have. And for us guys in the media, it's really good opportunity to find storylines and things to talk about. So what, when you're going into this first preseason game against the Raiders, what's on your radar?
It's got to be the third string quarterback battle, which doesn't sound like it's much of a battle at all right now. But Matt Barkley is going to get a lot of snaps. It sounds like Jake Coker is going to get the fourth quarter. It's put up or shut up time for both of these guys, in particular Matt Barkley, who's been in the system a year now. Everything that Bruce Arians is saying is that these guys haven't lived up to expectations in practice and in training camp so far. So we could easily see a different third string quarterback in the mix by week two if these guys come out and lay an egg. It's just not a position of luxury that they need to carry for guys right now. They can cut two of these guys so they can keep a handful of the other talented players they have across the roster who are NFL caliber and worry about getting a third string guy in later on. I think that's going to be an interesting position to watch because I don't think they've been very good from everything I've heard.
I have the wide receiving position on my radar, Espo, and that's probably the deepest position on the team. Maybe you could say the defensive line might rival that notion. But there aren't very many guys on this wide receiving core that you're going to cut. You know, there's the obvious guys that are brought in, the non-drafted players. But there's going to come a time where they're going to need to get value for someone to add depth in other positions like secondary or offensive line, like we talked about. And I'm wondering how much longer they're going to keep Jerron Brown around, because Jerron Brown is having another great training camp. He had a great training camp last year. He came in and stepped up when Mike Floyd went down with an injury last year. He made some big plays in some crucial games, especially that game in Seattle. I'm wondering if instead of just outright cutting someone and looking to add depth in certain areas, they might look to really target Jerron Brown quite a bit in these early preseason games. I have no inside sources on this notion. It's just a hunch that I have that they could be showing a lot of Jerron Brown, and that could be a chip that they maybe trade instead of having to release one of these guys and try to add depth at another position.
Interesting thought there. I could see that happening. Another guy I'm intrigued to see what he does in the preseason is Andre Ellington coming back from another injury-riddled season. I want to see how motivated he is, because now there's the potential that he's the third guy on the depth chart at running back, just a few years removed from him being the centerpiece of the offense, according to Bruce Arians. So I think we're going to learn a lot about Andre Ellington and how much that fire burns within him, because he's got something to prove this preseason as well.
And how about DJ Humphreys, first game really being the starting right tackle? He's going to have to go up against Khalil Mack and Bruce Irvin. So let's hope he doesn't screw up too much, and let's hope Carson Palmer is out of the game pretty early, because you know those. I think Khalil Mack is a future Hall of Famer.
Yeah, I need to see all of one series from Carson Palmer and then leave it be. I don't want to tempt fate there with knee deep on the offensive line there. Let's just get Carson Palmer out of there healthy, and I think preseason game number one is a success.
Cardinals Raiders Friday night, and then they're off to San Diego for a week of practices. That's tough life, you know, spend a week in San Diego in August. Probably not complaining over there. Let's switch gears, Espo. So Tim Tebow is back in the news. Tim Tebow is hosting a tryout here in Arizona to play baseball. And so I don't know if this is a publicity stunt or what, or if he could actually play. He might have an arm. I'm sure with his stature, he could hit a home run or two. But to make this local, Espo, if there was an Arizona athlete that you think could play another sport and succeed, who would it be?
Okay, well, I've got two that I'm interested in. I think Larry Fitzgerald could be a fantastic basketball player. We've seen the athleticism from him. I would love to see what he could do on a basketball court. That's one. But this one may be cheating, but I would love to see what Diana Taurasi could do in the NBA. I know it's the same sport, but it's a different level of competition. I would love to see it, because she has proven everything she needs to prove in the women's game. She's the greatest women's athlete, and basketball in particular, that we have ever seen. She's also the greatest athlete in Arizona sports history. Yeah, you heard that right.
Wow.
The greatest athlete in Arizona sports history. She's the most decorated. She is arguably the...
She won the most titles?
The most MVPs. They're tied, I believe. I believe they both have three right now. Okay. Nick Davila could change that, but you know what? I still am going to go Diana Taurasi well over Nick Davila, and I love the Latin laser, don't get me wrong, but Diana Taurasi is hands down the most decorated athlete in Arizona sports history, and she's the most dominant. She is the greatest athlete in Arizona sports history, and I would love to see what she could do in the NBA. You, with the way that it's space and pace in the NBA now, and that it's all about having people who can shoot, she is a sharpshooter. I would love to see her sitting out there at the three-point line chucking it in the NBA. I think she could be fairly successful at that, and it would be the most intriguing thing. Unlike Tim Tebow, I think she could actually see success, and it wouldn't just be a complete and utter publicity stunt like Tebow's pulling.
I have two as well. The first one, I would think Eric Bledsoe would make a fantastic running back.
Yes.
Now, I know he gets hurt, and he's had knee injuries, which doesn't bode well for running backs.
But that makes him a running back. That's pretty much right. what a running back is.
That almost makes it more of an accurate and tangible about him. But his build, his speed, his vision, his quickness, I think he would make an unbelievable running back in the NFL. And then Calais Campbell playing power forward for my team, setting some picks, getting some rebounds, blocking some shots. I think that's a guy that could go and play in the NBA, 6'8", come in at power forward and succeed pretty well. But I think that if you put Eric Bledsoe at running back for the Cardinals, you'd have an instant impact player.
Jared Valdir in goal for the Coyotes could be interesting.
Okay. He might not be agile enough, but at least he would take up the entire goal.
Yeah,
right?
You just stuff him in there. He doesn't need to really move. And then I think Steve Nash would have made one heck of a center for the Phoenix/Arizona Coyotes as well.
And now what would happen here if you had, you know, Tony Jefferson is a guy that has said he played basketball and is good at basketball. There's probably a lot of those guys out there. But, man, can you imagine maybe Steve Nash even being a quarterback? You know, he probably would get sacked and it would be over. But Steve Nash, his vision and his creativity, you never know.
They would have snapped him in half. Tony Clark was a guy that could have played for the Suns. He played at U of A.
He did play basketball. That's right.
He was a first baseman with the Diamondbacks. He could have been one of those guys that made the jump as well. Shaq would have been an interesting goalie as well. Another giant guy to just jam in the net. So that could have been interesting too.
The airing of grievances.
Oh, now
right, Espo?
God, we're going to go to this. And you know what? I've got a lot of problems with you people. And now you're going to hear about it. It's a Seinfeld reference. Our fans get this. If they know me, they know a 90s reference is bound to happen. I got a couple of these this week. But one thing that is really bothering me is the fact that the greatest dynasty in Arizona sports history is being tarnished by the league that they play in. If you're not aware, the Arizona Rattlers are about to go to their sixth straight conference championship, okay? They're about to play in that game this weekend. They have won three titles of the last five. They lost one of those last five years in the last second of the Arena Bowl. And yet they're playing in a league that is diminishing completely what they're accomplishing. Last week in the first round, they played the Portland Steel, a team that was 3-13. You heard that right. A 3-13 team made the playoffs. All right. Now they're going to face a Cleveland Gladiators team that finished the regular season at 7-9. That's because every team in arena football made the playoffs this year because there's only eight teams left. And a league that once actually was on the cusp of being a top four or five sport, probably on the heels of NASCAR at one point, moving into that discussion back in the mid-2000s when the sport was popular. It was on ESPN, then it was on NBC. They had a realistic shot of doing something special. Then a work stoppage for a complete year. kind of set the league back, and they've been reeling ever since. It is a complete and utter shame that what the Arizona Rattlers, Coach Kevin Guy, Nick Davila, who you mentioned earlier, what these guys are accomplishing is being tarnished by the ineptitude of that league office and a league that can't figure out their financials, can't figure out how to promote this game appropriately. It's tough, and you know, most fans probably know this. If a game's not on local Fox Sports Arizona, which only a handful of them were this year, you have to try to find it on a CBS Sportsnet or find it streaming on an ESPN3. In a world where leagues are signing deals with Twitter and Facebook to stream live, and it's so easy to get your sport in front of the people that want to see it, arena football has fallen so far behind the curve that it is sad. I love this sport. I've been going since 1992, and Cedric Bonner and Hunky Cooper and Randy Gatewood and all the great Arizona Rattlers actually opened America West Arena back then, and now they're playing in a league that can't get out of its own way, and it's fallen so far behind the curve that now Arena Bowl, this Arena Bowl, if the Arizona Rattlers win this weekend, they'll host the Arena Bowl and won't even get a play in their home arena because the Phoenix Mercury had a previously scheduled game and the league doesn't have enough clout to get that moved and work with the WNBA to reschedule that game. So the Arizona Rattlers could play their first game, home game, never that they've ever played, not in U.S. Airways Center, America West Arena, or now, as it's known, Talking Stick Resort Arena. They will have to play in Gila River Arena in Glendale for the Arena Bowl. Talk about really screwing the pooch and screwing up a potential home field advantage and another title for the greatest team in Arizona sports history. That has really, really been upsetting me. So that's grievance number one on the week. Number two is a little less serious, but still got my goat. The NFL decided it was time to stream a bunch of their classic games on YouTube. They decided 96 games were going to appear in their entirety on YouTube, and that it was going to be three from each franchise, and they were going to let fans vote. Well, guess what? The Arizona Cardinals fans proved there's way too many of those fans on the bandwagon that just joined in 2008 when this team went to the Super Bowl. Every game on that list was from either 2008, 2009, or last year's playoff run when they beat the Green Bay Packers. Now, I understand it. There were a lot of lean years from 88 through that Super Bowl run. But if you are a true Cardinals fan, if you still have the tramp stamp-like burn on your back from the metal bleachers at Sun Devil Stadium and spending a Saturday or Sunday afternoon there watching...
Occasional Monday.
Occasional, but you really wouldn't burn your back in at the nighttime. But you know what I'm saying. If you were there during the lean years, you would have voted for one of two games from that magical season in 1998 when they made the playoffs. Either the game that they defeated the San Diego Superchargers to clinch their playoff berth, and they did that at home, or the game that they beat the Dallas Cowboys, the most hated rival back when they were in the NFC East, at home in Cowboy Stadium. They beat them on a Jake Plummer, basically flea flicker, to win that game. Look, it was a shovel pass, not a flea flicker, excuse me.
I knew what you were
the
saying.
The fact that one of those two games didn't make this list upsets me because I would love to rewatch those games. I remember enough of 2008 and 2009 and last year, but I haven't seen that game, either of those games from that season in 98 since they were originally played. There wasn't a DVR. If I wanted to save it, I was going to have to put it on a VHS tape and hope my dad or my mom didn't record something over it. I would love to rewatch those games, and it's a shame that there weren't enough fans that were around back then to actually vote for one of those games to show up on the list. I think that's enough grievances for this first time.
I think they're both very well said. I'll start with the first one just to comment a little bit on both. From the Rattlers standpoint, you mentioned some of the games being on ESPN3 to catch them. Well, some of those ESPN3 broadcasts were blacked out locally, so you couldn't even watch them live. I only know that because I called some of those games myself, and I wouldn't be able to see them live or record them live. I'd have to wait until the replay after the game is over if I wanted to record the audio to have for myself. You know, so there's that.
And I got to tell you, that's no knock on the Rattlers organization. No, they're well run. I love that team, but that is a league issue.
Total league issue. And the other thing that's frustrating is there are other teams that have ruined it for the Rattlers, not just the league. There are teams like the San Jose SaberCats that basically went out and bought a championship last year and couldn't pay everyone and went over the cap and owed people money and had to fold and had some, from the things I hear, you know, some just not so great people running that organization, that it ran an organization that's been around for over 20 years into the ground.
Well, and that was one of the great rivals. That was one of the great rivalries between the Arizona Rattlers and the San Jose Saber Sharks. That's a Freudian slip. Saber Cats, but you know, it's a shame that this league. The Las Vegas Outlaws were another team. They brought in the front man for one of those bands from the 80s to kind of be the head of that, face of that organization, and that was a fly-by-night team that disappeared as well.
Here's what we can control. We have a phenomenal football team in town that's playing regular season and playoff games right now in the Arizona Rattlers. Kevin Guy has done a phenomenal job. He's basically the Greg Popovich of the Arena Football League, to where he has a system. He has his main guys, and he's been able to find more guys that fit his system and do it great. And it's done nothing but result in championships or conference championships, like you mentioned, in each of the last 5 years. So what we can do as Arizonans, as zonies or whatever you want to call it, is support this team, even if the league they're in doesn't and or doesn't do a good enough job. And then to respond to the YouTube, I completely agree with you. If I was going to want to watch a game over again, I think one of the first I would have mentioned is that 1998 game. I would love to see that one over again, because from what I remember seeing it as a kid, and I think when I was a kid was the last time I saw it, it was just nothing but crazy excitement and looking forward to sticking it to all the Cowboy people that I knew that lived here and Jake Plummer doing his thing. It was a good time. I think that would have been the first game I would have voted for among all the other ones.
Look, that was probably my favorite moment as a Cardinals fan, even more so than the Super Bowl, because when they clinched the playoff berth, I remember local sports radio went all night, and they took calls from the end of the game all the way through till the next morning. It was something amazing that we hadn't seen in this town before, because the Cardinals had been so bad. And then when they beat the Cowboys, they did the same thing. And I'm a young teenager at that point. I remember staying up a majority of that night because I was so amped up and just decided, you know what, I'm going to sit here. I'm going to listen to this. I'm going to enjoy this, because God knows when this football team is ever going to be good enough again to make the playoffs. And it took like another
eight, 10 years
for it to happen. You're right. It was 10 years. It took another 10 years for them to finally make the playoffs. And they almost left town in that 10 years because of the stadium vote as well. So that was such a great time and a memorable time to be a Cardinals fan, that I can't believe that one of those two games weren't voted on that YouTube list. It is a shame. And you know what? I joke that there's too many bandwagon Cardinals fans. There aren't. It's nice to actually have a fan base finally. But for those of us that were the 25,000 diehards that used to tune into radio every week when the home games were blacked out on television, listening to Tom Dillon call the games, you know, that would have meant something. That would have been nice to actually get to experience that again.
Wet cold take, Espo. We'll bring it back this week. It's where we find tweets, or maybe sometimes we'll find a column, or basically just a take that a media member has, either local or national, that is just so incredibly wrong from the past that we like to bring it back to fruition. This one goes out to someone I've never been a huge fan of, but so it'll be fun to throw this one out there. Skip Bayless, at Real Skip Bayless, tweeted this on August 1st of 2012 at 1:29 p.m. M. Phelps, also known as Michael Phelps, wouldn't be in my top 100 all-time greatest athletes. Doubt his hand-eye, speed, quickness, agility, depth of competition.
Yeah. I mean, that's Skip Bayless. I would rather listen to tweets from the fake Skip Bayless because it's probably more entertaining than the crap that the real Skip Bayless puts out there. And it's unbelievable that that guy got paid $5 million a year by Fox Sports 1, FS1, to actually come over and be part of what they're trying to build there. His opinions are part of what has sent the sports media world down the drain. We've seen hot takes galore, and that First Take show and embracing debate is part of the reason that we have to put up with so much of the trash that we have to deal with now. It's a shame that Skip Bayless can still perpetrate these kind of horrible takes on the sports world.
I mean, we could have a wet cold take for Skip Bayless every week until we get to the Jeremy Roenick episode, I'm sure.
Well, hopefully the show well is beyond going on that long. Well beyond that.
Yeah, absolutely. You're right. He is the first guy that I can remember that made it big because he would just have these horrible, completely wrong, but people listen to it and it turns the needle type of takes that all of a sudden we saw all these other people saying, well, I can have a blog or a website and have these ridiculous takes and cause problems and create a stir. And all of a sudden I'm famous and I have 100,000 Twitter followers. I feel like that's Skip Bayless in a nutshell. Sometimes I can't tell if he's actually being legit with some of the things he says, but then he continues to stick with it, you know? So power to him. He's our wet, cold take of the week. Michael Phelps wouldn't be in my top 100 all-time greatest athletes. Doubt his hand-eye, speed, quickness, agility, depth of competition.
He's like the old shock jocks back, you know, in the 80s and 90s that would just say something so appalling or so egregious just to get attention. He's the sports version of that, and I don't think we're going to see it stop anytime soon.
Meanwhile, Michael Phelps, it's been a lot of fun to watch him once again in these Olympics, and I found myself reading about those little circles. Did you read about those? The little cup
circles that he puts on
his back?
The cupping. It's actually suction cups I think it's to help circulation, which everything I've heard is it doesn't really work, but if it's superstition for him, that part's working out for him all right.
Because the first time I saw it, I was like, is that some sort of weird tattoo or is he turning into a Dalmatian? I'm not really sure. And then I felt compelled to actually read up on it. I felt like that dad, which you're going to feel really soon here, Espo, that dad that just has no idea what's cool and what's not cool. And so I was reading up on what the new in thing is with the random spots all over Michael Phelps's body. So good to know that he's getting circulation in his shoulders and his back when he's swimming and winning more gold medals.
I was afraid it was some weird sex thing, so I was just glad to find out it wasn't that.
Is it fun? Do you find when you're watching him swim and you see the reaction from his mom and his sister and his girlfriend that it doesn't feel as sincere as it used to be?
Look, I have had way too much of Michael Phelps' mom, all right?
Yeah, they have one guy that's paid just to zone in on her.
It's like her and the Kardashians' mom I could do without ever seeing again on television. All right, now I think the kid is really sweet to see. His new wife and the kid, or the fiance and the kid, I can watch that every day, because when you see a newborn getting to be there when his dad experiences something, that tugs on your heartstring. But please, please, please stop with Michael Phelps' mother. There is no point to it. I don't need to see that anymore. She got her 15 minutes of fame. Just focus on Phelps in the pool, basically sticking it to every other swimmer.
It's incredible. He's fun to watch. The Olympics have been fun to watch this time around, especially the Fantastic Five gymnasts. Man, they're fantastic. They're really good.
Oh yeah, and they've been impressive to watch, even though we haven't gotten to see any of it live, and we knew they won a gold medal by the time we saw it last night here in Phoenix. But they have been very impressive to watch. I actually think they may be up there with the Dream Team as one of the most dominant units in Olympic history.
Espo, how can everyone get a hold of us, track us down, listen to us, or follow us?
All right. Well, let's actually, before we get into it, you can subscribe to the show on iTunes. And as we always say, please rate the show and comment on it because it helps new people discover the show. And I got to tell you, Sarazona K.
Hey!
On August 4th, 2016, gave us a 5-star rating and said, quote, great show, fun, informative conversation for Arizona sports fans, casual or diehard. It moves quickly along quickly, which can't be said for many podcasts. Keep it coming. So, Jared, whatever family member of yours that was that left the review, thank them, please. They are the first. But you know what? Maybe if we get some additional people to leave reviews, I'm going to open up my Arizona Sports prize closet, all right? Ooh. I am sitting in my home studio right now, surrounded by a boatload of Arizona Sports memorabilia, and I got a few items that I'm willing to part with that are good Hall of Famer items, if you will. So maybe I'll incentivize you a little bit to rate us on iTunes and subscribe there. If you do it and you tweet us at Dry Heat Check with a screenshot, I might have a little something for you. So keep that in mind. You can also find us on Google Play. You can review us there as well. Same thing stands there. You can find us on Audioboom. I highly recommend you check out audioboom.com. You can find our content from the Brad Sesmatch Show, and much more to come there that we'll tell you about. You can also go to dryheatcheck.com, get every episode of the show, or as always, sports360az.com. You can tweet me at Espo as well. So I think that's everything there. I think that's everywhere you can reach it.
And I think there may or may not be a comment titled Anonymous. That person is going to request the Esposito Suns jersey. Just throwing that out there. So you're
going to comment on our own show and try to steal my own jersey. I see how it is.
That's how it is. That's Greg Esposito. I'm Jared Cohen. This has been the Dry Heat Check Keith Tkachuk episode on sports360az.com and all the places that Espo just mentioned. Subscribe, listen, and keep following us along. We're having a lot of fun each and every week.